before. In the beginning of the 20th century, the first great migration was underway. Black people fled the South in droves. They sought an escape from sharecropping and the terror of lynch mobs that tormented innocents. They sought work and better lives for their children. They got on the train and found new homes. 50,000 black people came from the South to Chicago between 1910 and 1920. Many of them were lured by the promises made in the Chicago Defender, the black-owned newspaper that urged them northward on the train. Life in the big city was different than in Mississippi or Alabama, but it brought its own difficulties, including the reality of northern segregation, overcrowded and substandard housing, the challenge of finding work for fair pay, and the struggle to survive in a harsh new place. Exodus 1. The stimuli of suggestion and hysteria gave the migration an almost religious significance, and it became a mass movement. Songs and poems of the period characterized the migration as the flight out of Egypt, bound for the promised land, going into Canaan, the escape from slavery, etc. Page 86. Now these are the names of the people of Adeline which came into Mississippi: Margaret, Prince, Julia, Cora, Amy, Fanny, Celia, and Molly, Eugenia, Pearly, Ida, Harper, Valley, and Rosa, Monroe, Stella, Rogers, Maybelline, Timaeus, and Early. And their people were fruitful and increased abundantly and multiplied, and their souls were mighty, and the land was filled with them. And in that land there were many kings, and great store cities to fill with cotton. And they put planters over the people, and overseers, and made the people tenants. And the people worked the land. But God was kind to the people. And the more the people were burdened to work the land, the more they multiplied and spread. So the planters began to dread the people, and worked them ruthlessly. And the kings held counsel. Behold, they said, the people are more and mightier than we. Come, let us deal wisely with them, lest they multiply, and it come to pass that they fight against us, and so get them up out of the land. And the people, so burdened, held counsel, and they said, the Lord our God smiles upon us. Why do we stay in the land of these kings? Come, every son that is born we shall cast into the river, and every daughter that is born we shall cast into the river. And the midwives made an ark of leaves and tar, and put the children therein, and lay them in the waters. And the people gathered at the bank, and bade them farewell. And the river carried them far from the cotton, and the kings, and their storehouses of browning blood. The train speaks. The presence of Negroes in large numbers in our great cities is not a menace in itself. Page 13. Even now I dream of them. Quiet nights in the rail yard when the little rat feet skitter beneath me. When the last of the strong men with his gleaming silver buttons has locked the door and laid his hands against me. I see them dancing in every passing cloud. My babies, born unto me in the hills and green lands, loose threads catching in my sharp parts when they don't watch out, blistered hands hauling parcels of burlap as hefty and shapeless as bound cotton. They move like rabbits then. They look for a lash that isn't there. Even them that never felt it, it's in their shoulders. The lash lives in their shoulders. Long after the last biscuit is gone, when the sunrise brings steel mountains, my children look and look through the space I have made for them, the gift I have prepared. They are safe within but can see without. They feel it before they know the words, then smile when it comes to them. It's flat. The land is flat. And they smile to think of it, this new place. The uncle or cousin who will greet them, the hat they will buy, the ribbons. They know not the cold, my babies. They know not the men who are waiting and angry. They know not that the absence of signs does not portend the absence of danger. My children, my precious ones, I can never take you home. You have none. And so you go out into the wind. In November. Frozen death better. To die from the bite of frost is far more glorious than that of the mob. I beg of you, my brothers, to leave that benighted land. You are free men. From the Chicago Defender. The first night I thought of my last night at home, of my uncle, like a fish, on a line, mouth moving, without speech, eyes like glass, shiny and dead, strung up, on a tree they don't have here, where the winter, they told me, is death itself, petrified men found on dirt frozen to rock. And maybe that will be me, a stone man, a tower of ash, needles where fingers were, and my eyes, too, gone to glass, found here, this first night, beneath a tree I have never seen, other men weeping in the dark, hearts broken at their belief that leaving the darkness meant finding the sun. But in the morning I rise, resurrected, an angel of the hard black ground. At the summit. The great opportunity had come to escape from what they felt to be a land of discrimination and subserviency to places where they could expect fair treatment and equal rights. Chicago became to the Southern Negro the top of the world. Page 2. By the time they got there, most of the intrepid team had perished. The ground was too hard to bury their bodies. Those that survived laid them in a neat row beneath a cliff overhang and decorated them how they could. A smooth stone here, a bird's feather carried from below, a shining coin from the recesses of a pack. They said words that sounded nice. Holding hands would mean exposure and that would be the end, but each was able to lay a heavy, guarded, enshrouded palm on the shoulder of the next. And when they arrived, at the top of the world at last, when all creation was laid before them, the furious wind in their eyes, the possibility of descent uncertain, this was the first thought, a small bloom in each heart. Not the glory that awaited them if they made it back, not the miracle of this murderous planet. Each thought of the weight of a hand on a shoulder, the heaviness, and the little heat. Coming from the stockyards. The change of home carried with it in many cases a change of status. The leader in a small southern community, when he came to Chicago, was immediately absorbed into the struggling mass of unnoticed workers. School teachers, male and female, whose positions in the South carried considerable prestige, had to go to work in factories and plants because the disparity in educational standards would not permit continuance of their profession in Chicago. Page 95. Anytime I get on the streetcar with the blood of the steers blossoming across the front of my canvas pants, my clothes call cattle more than man. Not all the white men cringe, dressed as some are in the same rusting dullness and dread. Every one of us a hook, a slicing knife, a chain, a pile of offal. $40 a week is worth the stain of death and the smell. Good men make more or less by whim. Each one of us a foundry. Hands to cut, to carry, knees to bend. This is still new to me. I called myself a scholar in Georgia, though that was part fancy. Just enough reading and writing to be of worth to my neighbors. Katie did people. Summer song folk. They sent me the children after harvest. Loveliest were the days when we made the woods a grand schoolhouse, marching two by two to the creek to recite Wheatley or Dunbar. Naturalists, the lot of them, calling out every tree by name, every fish. On the streetcar, I am lonely for them. Here, a white boy catches my glance, pulling his mother's sleeve and whispering loudly, "What's he got?" The question hangs ugly until I break its hold. I wave the book at him. "Read this yet?" His eyes drift over the red and the yellow and brown of me. Smiling, he nods. His mother frowns, drawing him nearer. He speaks. "That's Tarzan of the Apes. My papa read it to me. He told me Tarzan is like..." Under his mother's coat, he goes on, but his mouth is covered, voice muffled, and she looks out the window, away from me. What a thing, to be an invisible man, seen only by a babe. I recall my old pupils. X is how they signed their names when they first came to me. To each I said, "No, you have a name." And I wrote with them until they wrote alone. Zoetrope children, moving always and never. Zephyr children, wind of my heart. Keeping house. White persons are generally uninformed on matters affecting Negroes and race relations. This same ignorance applies to Negroes, though not to the same degree, for they know white people in their intimate personal and home relations and in connection with their work in factories and stores. They read their books and papers and often hear their discussions. Page 436. "Do not steal," she said. "And you can stay here for months, years even." Her mouth, a red line, she never asked if I wanted to stay there. Each room has secrets. In the parlor, an urn rests near the windowsill, 1905, and beneath, 1917, a psalm. She weeps in the tub. Steam crawls beneath the door and creeps up the window as I scrub soot from the wall. Dirt still finds the rich. I waited 4 months, and now I do steal. Small things. A porcelain mouse. A black stone from the garden. She only checks the cupboard. My mother taught me to be silent in their homes. They forget you're there. This way, you pass as a ghost. Come and go as you please. Hushed. I learn much this way, of the city, its powers, its promises made. I scour pots and whisper my plans as water rushes. After 7 months, I begin to steal food, too. A cup of flour, a brown egg in my bosom. She no longer speaks to me. At night, when I wait in the dim hallway to wash, I touch the black stone. I wonder at my fortune that something like this is mine. Anatomy, a treatise on the manifest differences of the Negro. The problem. The relation of whites and Negroes in the United States is our most grave and perplexing domestic problem. It involves not only a difference of race, which, as to many immigrant races, has been happily overcome, but wider and more manifest differences in color and physical features. Page 23. A splendid dove. A common starling. Contentment. The sorrow song swells. A glass of water. Water. Glass. Fresh flowers in a vase. In the meadow, a sermon. How lovely you look today. The streetcar left her standing there. Gently falling maple leaves. Do not look up. Errant coin in your pocket. Ink on the fingers. In her sleep, surrounded by family. In the alley, bereft. The certainty of dinner. Learn to eat standing up. A feather bed. Too soft is bad for the back. The high keys on a piano. Rust on porcelain is nice in its way. Nutmeg. The small boy waited all day for his mother, And when they finally let her go from the big house and she made her way up the many wooden stairs, he lay on the floor at the threshold, and she heard his stomach's noise over his breath, her silk scarf, her one good thing, held to his cheek as he slept. A splendid dove, contentment, a glass of water, fresh flowers in a vase. How lovely you look today. Gently falling maple leaves, errant coin in your pocket. In her sleep, surrounded by family, the certainty of dinner, a feather bed, the high keys on a piano, nutmeg. A common starling, the sorrow song swells, water, glass. In the meadow, a sermon. The streetcar left her standing there. Do not look up. Ink on the fingers. In the alley, bereft. Learn to eat standing up. Too soft is bad for the back. Rust on porcelain is nice in its way. The small boy waited all day for his mother, and when they finally let her go from the big house and she made her way up the many wooden stairs, he lay on the floor at the threshold, and she heard his stomach's noise over his breath, her silk scarf, her one good thing, held to his cheek as he slept. True Stories About the Great Fire. The sentiment was expressed that Negro invasion of the district was the worst calamity that had struck the city since the Great Fire. A prominent white real estate man said, "Property owners should be notified to stand together block by block and prevent such invasion." Pages 118 and 119. Everything they tell you is wrong. The Great Fire came here in a pair of worn loafers, eating its last sandwich wrapped in paper, and the Great Fire had a smell like grease and flowers. The Great Fire did not come to eat up the homes. The homes lay down at the feet of the Great Fire, for it was godly and it glowed. The Great Fire blessed the rooftops. The Great Fire danced with the lake shore. The Great Fire has an auntie who makes dresses, and the Great Fire wears a red pinafore and dances in a cakewalk. The Great Fire can only move at right angles. The Great Fire goes from block to block at night and kisses stray cats in the moonlight, and the cats catch the Holy Ghost. The Great Fire sits in the balcony and yells at the picture. The Great Fire sings in a too loud voice. The Great Fire has plans for you. The Great Fire is going to take your daughter someplace. The Great Fire has a hoard of gold like a dragon. The Great Fire already lives next door and hides in the daytime. The Great Fire knows they don't want it here. The Great Fire is going to burn the city they built. And we will watch from the stone tower. And we will wait for it to finish. And we can wait a long time. And the fire can, too. What happened? On July 27th, 1919, a race riot erupted in Chicago. With the benefit of hindsight, this unto itself is not surprising. Tensions and violence had been mounting in the weeks and months prior, with black people being attacked, seemingly at random, by groups of young white men and boys. An ongoing bombing campaign targeted black people who sought to move out of the city's segregated black belt, or anyone who assisted them with mortgages or realty services. And riots had taken place in nearby East St. Louis, Illinois, on May 28th and July 2nd. Still, the July 27th riot was devastating in its impact. 23 black people were killed. 15 white people were killed. 537 people were injured. 1,000 were made homeless by attacks and arson. And between 5,000 and 6,000 members of the Illinois National Guard were deployed. Most of the violence ended by July 30th, but the troops remained until August 8th. Much of the violence was blamed on athletic clubs, organized street gangs of white youth that had powerful political sponsors. The most notable of these groups was Reagan's Colts, sponsored by Cook County Commissioner Frank Reagan. The riot began when 17-year-old Eugene Williams was killed. Williams had been swimming in an area of Lake Michigan tucked between unofficially segregated beaches. While in the water, he drifted into what was considered the white area of the beach, where white people were on the shore throwing rocks at approaching black people. It is unclear whether Williams was struck by a rock and killed, or whether he remained in the water beyond his capability because he was afraid to return to the shore and be attacked. But ultimately, he drowned. Back on the beach, a group of black people demanded that a police officer arrest the person deemed responsible, and he refused. Within a few hours, the riot had begun. Exodus 5. Responsibility for many attacks was definitely placed by many witnesses upon the athletic clubs, including Reagan's Colts, the Hamburgers, Ale Wards, Our Flag, the Standard, the Sparklers, and several others. The mobs were made up for the most part of boys between 15 and 22. Page 598. Daley was elected president of the Hamburg Athletic Club in 1924 at age 22, a post he held for the next 15 years. Daley always remained secretive about the riots and declined to respond to direct questions on the subject. American Pharoah, Adam Cohen, and Elizabeth Taylor. And afterward, the people went to the chambers of the Pharaoh and told him, "Thus saith the Lord God, the God of the prairie and the lake, God of the flatlands and the railroads, God of vice and God of the disciple, God of the meatpacker and God of the laundress, God of the lost child, let my people go, that they may hold a feast unto me in the bungalows." And Pharaoh said, "Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let the people go? I know not your God, neither will I set you free. I am the one Pharaoh upon the land, and it is I who is Lord upon the flat land, Lord of the bridge and of the port, and the canal and the union, and all the streets which bear their names, Lord of the bootleg and Lord of brass." And they said unto Pharaoh, "Our God hath met with us. Let us go, we pray thee, lest the Lord our God meet you with plague and pestilence, or with the sword." And the Pharaoh heard them not, and sent them away, calling them idle. Then the Lord said unto the people, "Now shalt thou see what I will do to Pharaoh." The Lord came unto Pharaoh in a dream, and spoke to him, saying, "Pharaoh, you have been wicked, and denied my will. My people came to you as strangers in a strange land, and you denied them the land of their pilgrimage, and you have kept them in bondage. Now you will be punished for your cruelty and for casting upon them anguish of spirit." And Pharaoh lived many days under the watchful eye of the Lord God, until a pestilence rose within him, a sour smoke choking him from within. And though he still appeared in the vestige of man, a cloud moved into his spirit, and within he was no man, but a plague, like rot on the silk of corn, a filth where sugar had been. Or does it explode? July 27th was hot, 96 degrees, or 14 points above normal. It was the culmination of a series of days with high temperatures around 95 degrees, which meant that nerves were strained. Page 11. "Man, it was so hot. How hot was it? It was so hot, you could cook an egg on that big forehead of yours. You a lie. Man, I tell you, it was so hot. How hot? It was so hot, I dropped a tomato in the lake and made Campbell soup. Nuh-uh. It was so hot, the sun tried to get in the swimming pool and everybody else had to get out. Boy, that's hot. Who you telling that day was so hot? How hot? It was so hot, our dreams laid out on the sidewalk and said, 'Never mind, we good.'" Jump. Rope. On Sunday, July 27th, 1919, there was a clash of white people and Negroes at a bathing beach in Chicago, which resulted in the drowning of a Negro boy. Page 15. Little Eugene Jean, Jean, sweetest I've seen, seen, seen. His mama told him, him, them white boys mean, mean, mean. He didn't listen, listen, listen to what mama say, say, say. Went to the lake, lake, lake that July day, day, day. No, it goes like, little Eugene W., so sorry to trouble you. Rise, Eugene, rise. Calm your mama's cries. Just sit up and look around. Don't let them bury you down. No, it goes like, down, down, baby, down, down, the water's tugging. Sweet, sweet baby, don't make me let you go. Swallow, swallow, grab the sky, swallow, swallow, dark. Swallow, swallow, grab the sky, swallow, swallow, dark. Grandma, grandma, sick in bed. Call on Jesus, 'cause you're babies. No, it goes like, all dressed in black, black, black. All dressed in black, black, black. All dressed in. And he never came back, back, back. The Pearl Diver. No arrest was made. The tragedy was sensed by the battling crowd, and awed by it, they gathered on the beach. For an hour, both whites and Negroes dived for the boy, without results. Page 4. Uses waves to her favor. Knows when to resist, which is almost never. Holds the warmth in her tender parts, the fat on the hips, the breasts. Pushes the darkness aside, refusing the tangle of green. Reaches also for soft things. Sea cucumber, a slug, the arm of a boy. Grasps also at false starts. Abalone, mussels, a rock with the shape of a tooth. Blinks at every cloud, a burst of sand, blood in the water. James Crawford speaks. The Negro crowd from the beach gathered at the foot of 29th Street. As it became more and more excited, a group of officers was called by the policemen who had been at the beach. James Crawford, a Negro, fired into the group of officers and was himself shot and killed by a Negro policeman who had been sent to help restore order. Page 5. I saw the whites of his eyes before he let go the railroad tie that kept him almost afloat, almost alive, almost able to walk home, almost able to lay out first in the sand and feel the sun, almost able to face the stones, almost more than a stone's throw away, almost hidden from this terrible place and its everywhere eyes, almost free, almost not having his name in the mouths of fiends, almost not having his name in my mouth, almost nobody, nowhere, gone home to nothing. Me too. Almost nobody like me, too. I didn't want to be somebody, but he was somebody, because I saw the whites of his eyes before he let go of the railroad tie. So I spoke it. His name came out of me, and I fired. City in a Garden. After Carl Sandburg. The Negro crowd from 29th Street got into action, and white men who came in contact with it were beaten. Farther to the west, as darkness came on, white gangsters became active. Negroes in white districts suffered severely at their hands. From 9 p.m. until 3 a.m., 27 Negroes were beaten, 7 were stabbed, and 4 were shot. Page 5. Oh, my ugly homestead, blood-sodden prairie, herbs in horto, meaning, if it grows, it once came from dirt. Oh, my love, why do you till the ground with iron? Oh, my miracle, why do you fire in the dark? You, thief of dusk, you, captain of my sorrows, you, avarice, your ground is greedy for our children, and you take them as you please. The babies come from you, the train car orators and the beloved hustlers. they die, and then you send forth more. You who makes a place in a middle land, you ruthless, you seed ground, you bear the best of us and the worst in equal measure. Oh, my garden, which am I? The streetcar speaks. Streetcar routes, especially transfer points, were thronged with white people of all ages. Negro passengers were dragged to the street, beaten and kicked. Page 6. Not this freedom. I lost them, my wires sparking amidst the bruises. Sightseers. Often, the sightseers, and even those included in the nucleus, did not know why they had taken part in crimes, the viciousness of which was not apparent to them until afterward. Page 23. The sad truth is that most evil is done by people who never make up their minds to be good or evil. Hannah Arendt, The Life of the Mind. Just this once, I hope you'll forgive me for writing a somewhat didactic poem. I just didn't know how else to say that we live in a time of sightseers, standing on the bridge of history, watching the water go by, and there are bodies in the water, and the water has been dirty for so long, and the sightseers still drink from it. They buy special filters, and they smile. They have nice glasses and teacups. They put sugar in the dirty water that has our bodies in it. And there are sightseers seated beneath the Tower of Empire, peering up at the lights. And there are children in the tower, and the tower has been crooked for so long. And the sightseers still look at it. They find the lights enchanting. They meet up on the weekends. They have picnics in the plaza of the tower that has our children in it. And there are sightseers looking at the House of Power, waiting to take a tour. And there are devils in the house, and the house has been wicked for so long, and the sightseers still worship it. They stand in front and take pictures. They marvel at the white pillars. They send postcards of the house that has the devils in it. And just this once, I hope you'll forgive me for asking you directly to forget the lovely water, to forget the charming pillars, because there are children in the tower. There are children in the tower. There are children in the tower, and they are dead already. This is a map. Samuel Bass, on account of the streetcar strike, was walking the 5.5 miles from his work to his home when a gang of white men knocked him down 3 times and cut gashes in his nose and cheeks with their shoes. Bass hid behind freight cars till a Jewish peddler took him in his cart to State Street. A doctor was visited, but when he learned that Bass had no money, he turned him away without treatment. Page 659. This is a map of my city. Here are the places in my city where I dare not go. Here is where the electric wires gave out, and here is where I still had to make it home. And here is the first mile where I whistled the way my granny taught me to keep away the haints. And here is where a baby waved to me from a window. And here is the second mile where I heard the calls. And on this map there is no third mile in this, my city, where I first prayed to die. And then, hearing a single cardinal over the din of their threats, changed my mind and prayed to live. And this is a map of my neighbor's city, where he traces away through the mud each day, the squeal of old wood on iron heralding his arrival, a king of the streets, a conquering hero of nowhere. And this is a map of my body. This is the blood of my rivers. This is the bruise of my marshland. This is the sinew of my furthest ridge. And this is a map of the railroad. And if I could stand and walk, I could make it all the way back to my granny, pinching snuff and humming. And if she looked up, she would say, "Boy, my baby, where you been all this time?" There is no poem for this. A mob of white civilians, soldiers, and sailors, who had been chasing Negroes through the Loop District for the previous 2 or 3 hours, beating and robbing them, and destroying property where Negroes were not found, entered one of Thompson's restaurants, where Hardwick was breakfasting. Another Negro, one King, was also in the restaurant. The mob set upon them, throwing food and dishes. Hardwick dodged into the street, and King hid behind a dish counter where he was wounded with a knife. Failing to catch Hardwick as he fled down Adams Street, one of the rioters stepped to the curb and fired a revolver at him, bringing him down. Several of the crowd robbed the corpse. Page 666. Barricade. Sniping was a form of retaliation by Negroes which grew out of the automobile raids. These raiding automobiles were fired upon from yards, porches, and windows throughout the Black Belt. One of the most serious cases reported was at 31st and State Streets, where Negroes barricaded the streets with rubbish boxes. Page 18. My father told me to get the refuse in the street and not be too proud to touch it with my hands. The smell was not the worst thing. The fear was like choking on air. I never heard a roar like that in all my days before or since. I mean, the motorcycle, when it barreled toward me like a dart, and I just stood, watching the gleaming metal. And also, I mean, the man's cry when he fell. And also, I mean, the roar of my father when he shot the man down. And also, I mean, the engine that just kept going, though its master lay dying in the trash heap. Upon seeing a picture of a car in a school book. Automobile raids were added to the rioting Monday night. Cars from which rifle and revolver shots were fired were driven at great speed through sections inhabited by Negroes. Negroes defended themselves by sniping and volley firing from ambush and barricade. So great was the fear of these raiding parties that the Negroes distrusted all motor vehicles. Page 6. 100 years ago, before the burning days, they rode in metal carriages, Grandma says. Rich people did. Big iron capsules on fat rubber wheels like a buggy, but with no horses, no one to talk to or feed. I asked her, well, what is a driver if no living being is the one driven? What is a tire if no one has to breathe to make it work? And she laughs right at me. The autos took their roar from a vapor drawn from the ground, an ancient something, something that could run out. I asked her, well, what does it mean to move on earth through the will of something with no heart inside? Well, what would you do if you had more than four friends? They gave up the heavy vessels when we built our city. We live as we should now, moving in good things that let us touch the ground and feel the shape of the earth, bicycles and wheelchairs, ponies and roller skates. When I greet my lavender with her water and hay, I say, good morning, and who could ever want you to be anything but just as you are, just as God made you on your own feet? And she says the same back to me. High Boon for July 30th. Rain on Wednesday night and Thursday drove idle people of both races into their homes. The temperature fell, and with it the white heat of the riot. Page 7. Sparrows in the elms fluffed and shook until they looked like eggs again, fat brown feathered eggs, hidden amid the boughs and crowded against one another. Just so, they curled each toe over the givingness of the narrow wood, just so, as their ancestors had in a place across the ocean. They had never seen the ocean, but tonight they knew water again. Just so, they knew the right corner, the right way to lean, the right way to be, to nestle just beneath a canopy of leaves. Enough to live for now, beneath the green, but still watch it all come down before closing eyes to sleep. The tip of one branch, the place where its strength gave in to the most delicate, almost nothing, gave way to its last leaf. Its tender ribs held the rain until they could not, and it bowed and sprang back and bowed and sprang back, drop by drop. And with every small pool that it let go, the rivulets cascading over a stone cornice grew stronger, spilling in their turn down to the street. Someone watches from within, relieved to open the curtains just enough to see the elm dwellers in their old, sodden city. After days of blood, candles in the window again, birds shake off the rain. After. In 9 of the 38 deaths resulting from the riot, a grand jury indicted an individual on a murder charge, and 4 of those individuals were convicted, 2 white and 2 black. No one was convicted for the death of Eugene Williams. Daniel Callahan, the police officer who refused to make an immediate arrest, was dismissed from the police force and then later reinstated. The riot left an indelible mark on the city. Its sense of boundaries, of relationships between neighbors, of fear and mistrust were cemented for a century to come. Exodus 10. There is nothing in the makeup of a Negro, physically or mentally, which should induce anyone to welcome him as a neighbor. The best of them are insanitary. Insurance companies class them as poor risks. Ruin alone follows in their path. From a 1920 issue of The Property Owner's Journal, page 151. And the Lord said unto the people, stretch out thy hands toward heaven, that there may be darkness over the city, even darkness which may be felt. And the people stretched forth their hands, and there was a thick darkness in all the city. It weighed heavy on the heads of saint and sinner alike. And the people smiled upon the darkness, and the darkness was good. For upon them the darkness was as burnt sugar, pleasing to the skin and sweet upon the lips. And the people delighted in the darkness. But upon the wicked the darkness was as a plague, and beneath it they writhed in torment, weeping and calling for mercy. The thickness of the darkness was such that they saw not one another, neither rose any from their place for days. And the people found leisure, calling to one another through the darkness as in a child's game. And they found each other in laughter. And to them all noise was joyful in the darkness, so that each found the work of the Lord in the song of the sparrow or the sigh of the sleeping infant. And it was good.